What's going on, my haunted holiday hobbits? On today's show, it's the holiday episode. We speak with MUFON investigator, paranormal investigator, and tour guide of the Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum in New York, Mr. John Wright. Edgegrave Dave reviews one of my favorite holiday classics, Jack Frost. And no, not the Michael Keaton one. Chris Whitehouse of the White House investigation team talks about a ghostly bomber and a very special Tiny Terrifying Tales. So let us slay!
Do aliens exist and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to the Warped Reality Podcast Holiday Edition. I'm your host, Ghost Joe. It's also, check this out, it's the 27th episode of Season 2, but it's my 50th episode of podcasting, and I've reached over 5,000 listens, which is amazing. So thank you to everyone that tunes into my silliness every other week. I really appreciate it. I did want to dedicate this episode to my cousin, Jason Lewis, who's a U.S. Navy veteran. I mentioned him in the interview with John Wright on this episode, and he recently passed away way too early at the age of 42. I remember having a lot of great memories with him. I remember I stayed over his house for a week in the summertime when we were younger, and we were dancing around the living room to the end street fight in Rocky V, which is terribly underrated. I really loved that Rocky movie, especially because of that memory, especially now. So rest in peace, Jay. You will be missed. My thoughts and prayers go out to his son, my aunt, uncle, and his two amazing sisters. I love you guys so much. So as I said in the intro, we have a full show for you guys. So I'm not going to take up any more of your time. Here's Chris Whitehouse with a segment about an unusual aircraft sighting. Take it away, Chris.
Hello. Today I want to talk about a teammate of mine and her experience as a child. Now, Lucy, my teammate, paranormal_girl_ on TikTok, she saw a massive plane flying so low, she anticipated it crashing near her as a child. She saw the pilot, she could see the rivets in the metal. That's how low this plane was. And here we have an article from SpookyIsles.com, which shows that it was actually a mass sighting, and it was called here the Phantom Lancaster Bomber of Barnoldswick. And I read directly from the article here. The Avro Lancaster Bomber is most famously remembered for its role in the Dam Busters' daring raid on the Ruhr Valleys dams in World War II. But since 2004, some visitors to Barnoldswick in Lancashire have reported seeing a Phantom Lancaster Bomber flying in the skies. A couple visiting Barnoldswick was astonished to see a Lancaster Bomber above the Rolls-Royce Company building. They identified the Lancaster due to its four large grey propellers. The plane glided through the mist silently and seemed as though it was going to collide with their car and the houses nearby, but a few seconds later it had completely vanished. Several people reported similar sightings of the Phantom aircraft in Lancashire and Yorkshire on the same day. A local newspaper ran an article soon afterwards asking readers to contact an aerial phenomena expert to report their sightings. A man came forward to say that he witnessed the bomber flying silently towards a small airstrip at Barnoldswick. The airstrip was said to have been an emergency landing site during World War II. In 2004, a war veteran confirmed that the Lancaster bomber did in fact make an emergency landing at Barnoldswick during the war. Explanations for the phenomena have been put forward, the RAF using Hercules for training and flights of historical aircrafts, but the witnesses dismissed those explanations as there was only one fully functioning bomber in the UK at that time. The Rolls-Royce company confirmed that they did own and fly a Spitfire, but the Spitfire plane is a very different design to the Lancaster bomber. Another possible explanation is a time slip, an unexplained phenomenon that sees moments of the past replayed at other points in the present. Also, there is possibly a correlation between energy fields and magnetic residue surrounding industrial manufacturing. So if you find yourself in Barnoldswick one day, do remember to keep your eyes to the skies. Well, that's great that you know, she saw it as a kid, and there's evidence to back up that she was not the only one, and I find that more compelling. So I hope you enjoyed that, and I'll speak to you another time.
Wow, that must have been an excellent encounter, Chris, for her. It must have been also amazing to see a piece of history right before your eyes, and to get validation from the fact that it was a mass sighting is pretty incredible as well. Check out Chris Whitehouse on YouTube with his White House Investigations page and Talking Paranormal. He does some great interviews, some great investigations. You are going to love his stuff. His information is always in the show notes, so please check that out. And now, without wasting any time, on to my horrible reviewer, Edgegrave Dave, with an awesome review on the horror classic Jack Frost. By the way, guys, I recently recorded an interview with Edgegrave where we talk horror, the paranormal, and some music stuff as well. So stay tuned in the future for that. So on to the segment.
Slashing through the snow. Ho, ho, ho! Edgegrave Dave's here to spread some holiday fear. And regardless of what you celebrate, whether it's Christmas, 8 Crazy Frights, or Kilwanza, the happy horror days are here on the Warped Reality Podcast. So let's get into it. And though there are many flicks to choose from this year, the movie that we're going to discuss is none other than 1997's Jack Frost, not to be confused with the Michael Keaton film of the same name, which came out in 1998. And there's a really funny behind-the-scenes story about that with the director, which we're gonna get into, Michael Cooney. So, a long time ago, on a cold and chilly night, Ghost Joe and I discovered a very interesting movie. A movie that chilled to the bone and made us laugh our asses off at the same time. This movie, called Jack Frost, really had us gushing, really had us rolling, and it was a freaking icing and slicing laugh and a half. So, Jack Frost is also the debut performance of Shannon Elizabeth. Yes, the very same American Pie Shannon Elizabeth. Also starring Christopher Alpert, Stephen Mandel, and Scott McDonald as Jack Frost. At this time, I am going to issue an Edgegrave warning, spoiler alert. So if you want to go leave out your milk and cookies for Santa Claus, now is the time. So this little Christmas tale starts out like so many others. You have a warm fire, you have a Christmas tree, and there it is. The opening credits are literally ornaments on the Christmas tree, with a camera panning from the very top down to the bottom and the sides, while you hear the voice of an uncle that's about to tuck in his little niece and tell a Christmas tale. And this is one of the most unique openings that I've actually seen in a movie, or in a horror movie. I mean, there's no graphics, you just literally have something that somebody has made. And the dialogue back and forth is just great. You have things like, Jack be nimble, Jack be quick, Jack gouge eyes with candlesticks. So let's get into Jack Frost. Though there have been other iterations of the Jack Frost character in other movies, this Jack Frost isn't trying to stop old Saint Nick from delivering Christmas presents. This Jack Frost isn't trying to take over the North Pole. And this Jack Frost certainly isn't trying to team up with a band of Christmas superheroes. Yeah, that actually happened once. This Jack Frost is a mutant killer freaking snowman. And oh boy, is this done with purposely poor putrid graphics. I mean, he's got an oven mitten for a hand, and even silly icicle fangs at some point. It's just hilarious, great, and sometimes brutal. But I think you'll be okay watching this one, folks, because after all, it takes place in the scenic backdrop of Snowminton. Yeah, there's actually a town where everything in this movie is literally about snowmen. There's a snowman competition. People have snowmen on the signs. It's even in the airport. Well, that actually happened in part two, which is equally as entertaining. I tell you, sometimes I don't even know which one's better. I love them both so much. But let's go back to focus here. We are talking about 1997's Jack Frost. So, you have a cop that tried to apprehend him when he was in his human form. And as he reminds you, I'm gonna tear your world apart! And he certainly does try. Some of the kills are just outright hilarious. You have a couple of teenagers that are trying to do it. They deserve it. You have bullying. They get theirs. You have a husband and wife that the husband isn't really nice to her. They get theirs. You know, so without giving too much away, we also have an FBI agent where, again, the campy dialogue just works perfectly between the cop character and the FBI agent, as there are just so many cheesy lines. I mean, you have these doofy cops, right? And I mean, literally, they're all doofy, where even some of the crimes that take place, they just have something ridiculous to say, like about maybe like the holidays, or, oh, I'll take another apple, or, oh, should we leave them up for Christmas? You have also some holiday cheer in the movie. There's Christmas music. There's that general warm kind of feeling, even though there's a crazy mutant killer snowman running around. So, the movie's plot here, basically you have a guy that's about to be executed at midnight. There's a freak accident with the truck, and bam, he hilariously, and I do mean hilariously, becomes one with the snow. I mean, literally, the way that it's done, I think that you're just going to laugh your spine sick. There's a lot of underlying things that also happen, as they did try hard to have underlying humor. I mean, the officer Sam, for some reason, it looks like the kitchen fan light is just hanging a little bit too low. He just kind of keeps smacking his head in there. I mean, come on, Sam. Guess that you got to watch out for that. You know, you have his kid that seems oblivious to everything, and he's just making a mess, like in the kitchen. And how do you stop a mutant killer snowman? Well, with antifreeze, of course, right? I mean, it just makes perfect sense. This entire movie is just as ridiculous as it could be horrifying. But again, in a very campy kind of fun and even Christmas cheer, Christmas spirit way. So I do certainly recommend that you see it. I also wanted to let you know that when I had first viewed this movie, it was on VHS. And I clearly remember it had a hologram cover, which had the face of a snowman, and then it would go back and forth into this, like, frozen skull-type creature with fangs. It was just awesome. I mean, they really do try hard to do interesting things like that. Other honorable mentions that I could say about this film is that, hey, for a debut performance of Shannon Elizabeth, bravo, well done. I mean, hey, it brought it to American Pie, right? So snuggle up with your loved one, make some hot cocoa, preferably in a snowman mug, and go ahead and watch Jack Frost. I give it a 4 out of 5 ice cold graves. Now back to you, Ghost Joe.
Thanks, man, for that horrifying review. I honestly loved that movie when we saw it so many years ago. The second one, as you said, is equally as funny and equally as great. So everybody, please check that out. It's great holiday films, great holiday fun. So if you guys have a paranormal experience you'd like to share, ghosts, aliens, cryptids, time slips, telekinesis stuff, anything, alternate reality stuff, or, you know, any killer crazy snowmen, please let me know about it. I want to hear about it. 845-600-0744. You could do so anonymously, or you could email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. Again, that's ghostjoeny@gmail.com. And now for a very special Tiny Terrifying Tales. It's a Christmas poem, if you will, and it's written and narrated by yours truly, Ghost Joe. So let's get on with it.
Now it's time for Tiny Nine Tails.
Was the night before Christmas. Happiness in the air. Mom and Dad get ready while the little ones say prayer. Johnny wants a skateboard, a kitchen set for Sue. What if we don't get them? Whatever would we do? The kids hop to bed. The mad dash began to set the gifts up, stockings in hand. Down in the basement arose such a clatter. Dad went to go check. Nothing seems the matter. Now it's the morning. Christmas is here. The children start waking with smiles and cheer. They wait for their cue. Their parents they don't see until they ran down the stairs, their heads underneath the Christmas tree.
You're listening to the Warped Reality Podcast. But don't be too scared. It's a real scream.
So I hope you enjoyed my joyous holiday poem entitled Christmas Day. I figured, you know, it was a holiday episode and, you know, why not keep it cheerful, right? So, hey, there you go. But right now, we are on our way to listening to an interview that I did with Mr. John Wright. So stay tuned. Here it comes. On the show today, I'm welcoming Mr. John Wright to the show. I met John when he gave me a guided tour at the Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum in Pine Bush, New York, in Orange County. He was such an informative guide about everything within the museum. And then I found out that not only is he a paranormal investigator, UFOologist, a member of MUFON, he's also a history school teacher, right?
Yeah.
This guy does it all. And I knew he'd be a great person to interview for the podcast. So,
and I built my own furniture.
He's a Renaissance man, this guy. That's excellent, man. So you said you're a history teacher. How long have you been doing that? What grades have you taught?
So I've been teaching for 26 years. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the high school or what. I teach
over
at, okay. So Orange County, New York High School. I've been at that school for 26 years. I teach ninth grade history, and I also have a elective course that I created just a few years ago, which is it's basically just focuses on warfare. Mm-hmm. And what I do is I take a look at things like ancient cave paintings, that sort of stuff. And I try to find evidence within them that identifies when early man went from just hunting animals to all of a sudden hunting people. And then from there, talk about some different things as far as advance of weapons, how weapons change the tactics. We talk about all the different great conquerors and things along that line. But I do either ancient history up through medieval history and in the warfare class.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. That's real cool. Do you feel that being a teacher has helped you in the paranormal stuff that you look into, or do you think it's hindered? You know, how has it hindered you also?
I'll be honest. People always say, like, what kind of drew you to something? I got interested in the paranormal, not necessarily because of TV shows or things like that. I've heard a lot of people talk about, oh, I used to watch In Search Of, and I'm a little bit younger right. than that. You know what I mean? I missed that by a couple of years. And then kid growing up in the sticks, we only had like four or five channels. So we didn't have many options available to us. But I've had several different personal experiences that kind of pushed me down this road. One of them dealt with my grandmother's passing, or my great grandmother's passing. She was about 89 years old, and we used to go down to Rockland County all the time, every weekend, to see her at the nursing home. And we would go in there and spend time with her, spend the whole entire day. I think it was about 9 or 10 years old when she passed away. We were really close. I, believe it or not, wound up staying home. I went to school. I didn't go to the funeral that day down in Rockland County. When I came home, basically got off the bus, came into the house, made a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I was walking into the living room, and I was getting ready to watch afternoon cartoons. And as I'm doing so, I hear somebody say my name. And the voice that I heard was my great-grandmother's voice. So I jump up real quick. I start looking around the house. I'm like, am I going nuts? Did I just freaking hear something? I'm like, there's no way, right? So I thought maybe, oh, you know what? Maybe mom and dad just pulled in and they're yelling down from the car to the house to see if I'm home, that kind of thing. So I'm looking out the window, no car, no nothing. Nobody's out there. At this point, I start getting a little spooked. And just a couple seconds later, I hear my name called again, a second time. And clear as day. At that point, I was so spooked. I went outside and I got our dog. I brought her into the house. She was part German Shepherd, part wolf.
Wow.
So she was a really tough dog. So I wound up bringing her in the house and she stayed in the house with me until my parents got home. So that was definitely one of the things that pushed me in this direction. Then when you go looking for information, because again, late 70s, early 80s, there is no internet there. You know what I mean? So my biggest pull for information was like the school library, which was really limited on that kind of stuff. And then there was the book fairs. So the one book fair, I remember buying this one book. It was like a 14 style book. So it looked at all kinds of weird phenomena that were unexplainable. And what I loved about it was it talked about Bigfoot. You know, I'm a Bigfoot fan.
Right.
It talked about all kinds of different cases, talked about the Loch Ness Monster. It talked about, I think it was the Martell case, the Martell UFO case. So those things really kind of drew me in. And beyond that, there's other things that have occurred. I know what it was. Sleep paralysis. So I had, I've had experience with that where I was dreaming. I was having a nightmare. I woke up from the nightmare in another nightmare. And it was really weird because when I woke up, I thought I was actually awake. And right next to me on the side of my bed was this cloaked figure, like kneeling down. Couldn't see the face or anything like that. But I could feel, you could hear the breathing and you could feel the breath on my face. Wow. And eventually I wound up snapping out of that and waking up for real. So all those things, like when you're a kid, really freak you out. And right. It's really hard to find explanations for it. So that's what really kind of put me down this road. And then since then, I'm going to say it took sort of like a backseat. Once I hit my teens, I was doing sports, all that stuff. Once I got into college, became a teacher, my wife and I got married, we had kids, and things were just like crazy from that point on. And it wasn't until just after COVID, we shut down 2020. So 2021. So in 2021, I actually stopped coaching. I'd coached for 29 years.
Wow.
And that gave me some time off. And my wife knows me. When I'm bored, I cause trouble. So she's like, if you're going to be home, then you're going to definitely have to do something that's going to keep you occupied and take up some time. And that's what kind of led me into doing all this stuff.
Wow. I mean, you know, it's funny too, because the last couple of people that I had interviewed, that's going to be out a little bit, a few episodes from now. He had also said that his first experience was with his grandmother that passed away, that he said he used to see his grandmother. His grandmother used to tuck him in every night and she was passed away. You know, it's amazing.
It's giving me the chills right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I've had experience since I was a young child, not a lot, but maybe like a handful, I guess. And one of them was actually, I was going through I go home and my parents, you know, cause my grandmother lived in Long Island. So my parents were out in Long Island at this point. And I was home getting ready for the show, getting ready for the gig. And I was thinking about my grandmother saying, you know, I hope this is okay that I'm doing this. All of a sudden the cordless phone rings and I answer it. And all it is static. And it sounds like there's somebody trying to talk to me. and all I hear is static, right? So now I'm trying to turn it off and it's not turning off, you know? And I'm like, all right, I know what this is, you know, because I've had experiences before. Never like that.
Yeah.
But I've had experiences before. I'm like, wow, that's, you know, that's... So I pretty much said, like, I said it out loud. I said, listen, grandma, if that's you, this is scaring me right now. You know, like, please just, I get it. You know, just please just let me hang up the phone, you know? And all of a sudden I was able to hang it up, you know? It's funny because all of my experiences, I've said this a million times on my podcast too. It was like, all of my experiences happen when I ask for a sign. That's why I don't do it anymore, because now I have a home with two small children and I'm not trying to get any signs like that anymore. And to be honest with you, I actually get signs when I'm doing my podcast sometimes too, you know, because I'm talking about this subject matter. Sometimes like I'll be interviewing, I don't know if you ever heard of Carl Johnson. He's a famous demonologist.
Demonologist. Yep. He's got right. the brother.
Yes. Keith brothers. And John. Yeah. Yep. Both of them. Great, great guys. I've talked to them both. Amazing, amazing interviews too. Really, really nice guys. But before I did the Carl Johnson interview, I'm getting everything set up, my microphone and everything. And right next to me is my backyard sliding door. And now I do everything at this time every show. It's like 10 o'clock at night, 9:30 at night, because my kids are sleeping and I don't want them to hear this stuff. So I'm getting everything ready. And all of a sudden I hear knocking on my backyard door. And I'm like, crap, you know, like I'm not answering that. I know what that is. I know, you know what I'm doing. just let me do my interview, you know, like, I get it, but you know, it wouldn't be the first time. It's not going to be the last time, but
no, I had, you had the thing with my great grandmother after, my father-in-law passed away, which was, it's been 10 years now. And we went up, my wife was already up there. She had gone up, they knew he was in really bad condition. He was going to have to go in for surgery, those types of things. And so we wound up going up later on, and we go to the wake, the funeral service, all those things, come back to the house for the reception. And I'm the type of person, I like being alone. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. when there's big crowds and it's really loud, I'd prefer to kind of stand off to the side. So I went down in their basement where we used to play pool all the time. And so I went downstairs, played pool for probably close to about 15, 20 minutes, maybe even a little bit more than that. And I finished up. And for whatever reason, I said a little prayer and I said goodbye to my father-in-law. And as I turned to go up the steps, dude, my father-in-law's voice says, bye, John. And I'm going up the steps. Now, I know what people will think. They're going to sit there and go, well, how do you know it wasn't somebody upstairs? How do you know it wasn't a voice coming from upstairs? The reason why is because there were only women in the house. There were no men. And this was my father-in-law's voice. He had a deep, gruff voice, and it was his.
Wow.
It gave me the chills, dude. I can't even tell you. And we've had so many different weird things, like you're talking about knocking on the door. I haven't had that yet. Knock on wood, thank God.
Yeah, it's scary stuff.
But this is just, I apologize if I'm getting off topic, but
no.
Our old refrigerator, my father-in-law used to ask us all the time about like the ice machine, because we would always have issues with it and stuff like that. And right after he had passed away, the ice machine actually stopped working. And then the weird thing is, my wife and I would have like a conversation, like we're debating back and forth, and one's trying to get the edge over the other in the argument or make the point. And we both believed that we were correct. And then one of us says something, and the next thing you know, the ice machine works. Like you hear ice cubes drop down into the thing. Special occasions like anniversaries, birthdays, stuff like that, all of a sudden the ice machine would just start working. It's the freakiest thing ever, dude.
Wow. Yeah. It's amazing, man. Like when they want to show their presence, I mean, they really could do it. The Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum, right? How did you get involved with them?
So this was that year that I stopped coaching. And basically what happened was, like I said, my wife knows me. I'm the type of guy that if I have way too much time on my hands, I'm going to get in trouble. For example, I was about 5 or 6 years old. And you know how your parents always tell you, don't stick something in the light socket?
Sure.
My parents told me that. They never told me why. So that's the kind of stuff I do. But anyway, so what had happened was I'd always missed out on the alien fair. I was never able to go because I was always coaching. And so this year I had off and I finally was able to go. So I was like, oh, great, man. It's going to be awesome. So I saw that you had a few different people coming in that were going to talk. Lee Spiegel, Richard Dolan, and Mark D'Antonio. So I was like, I've seen a couple of these guys. Definitely want to see them in person. So I went looking for the tickets. I had to go to the museum website to get the tickets. At that point, I looked at it. I go, holy crap, Pine Bush has a museum. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I ordered the tickets and I look at my son. I go, hey, you want to go with me? My wife and my daughter both laughed at us and said, no, we'll stay home. So we went in, we did the tour. And Lance, the manager of the museum, was the tour guide. We get through the tour. And that was another one of those tours. It was only supposed to be about an hour and a half. But I'd asked a lot of questions. I was adding information as we were going. And I think it wound up a 2.5 hour tour. So we finish up and we're getting ready to leave. And as we're walking out, Lance kind of waves me over to him. And I'm like, what's up, dude? I'm sitting here. I'm looking at my son. I'm like, oh, man, we're about to get in trouble. So he's like, dude, you got to come in and you got to be a tour guide. And I said, I don't know about that. I mean, I've never really done that kind of thing before, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, do me a favor, just think about it. So I gave him my email, gave him my phone. And as I'm walking out, on the counter, they have the, do I have it in here? They have the pamphlets for, here it is right here. So they had the MUFON pamphlets. Hmm. And I was like, I've always wondered about MUFON. So I grabbed the pamphlet. I go home. I just start looking at the information, go on their website, that kind of thing. And again, had a lot of time on my hands. And I found one of the numbers, Chris DiPerno. He was the chief investigator at the time. And so I basically emailed him and he sent me his, he's like, call me, gives me his number. I call him. We wound up having, I think it was probably about an hour long conversation. During the conversation, he's like, oh, where do you live? I'm like, oh, I live in Pine Bush. He's like, what? I'm like, what do you mean, what? I live in Pine Bush, man. We're out in the sticks. He was all pumped. He's like, oh, my God, you live in Area 52. And I was like, yeah. He goes, we don't have any investigators down there. He goes, would you consider becoming a field investigator? And I'm like, well, what does it entail? All that stuff. So he explained that to me. And I said, all right, what do I got to do? He's like, well, you got to get the book. You got to study. You got to do this. And then you got to take the test. So I wound up ordering the manual. And so here's my manual.
Oh, wow.
And I studied that for about 3 weeks, took the test. I got like an 89 or something or a 90 on the test. Next thing I knew, I was entered into online courses with Doug Wilson, who kind of went through how to work the basically the report system, the reporting system, how we should go about conducting interviews, that sort of stuff. And then eventually I got my, I think I actually got my first case before I even completed the online stuff. And then from there, I think I'm up to over the last year or so, about 24 cases I've been through. It's one of those things that, you have a certain idea in your head. Like when you hear field investigator, you're thinking like a cop, you know what I mean? A crime scene investigator.
Sure.
Unfortunately, that hasn't been the reality, at least not for me. A lot of it's been online, just basically looking at photos, looking at video, reviewing those things, trying to see what's actually there, identifying other possibilities, going through, checking your lists, and then eventually coming to some sort of conclusion. I do tend to be a little bit more skeptical, but I'm open-minded about things. I'm not where I go into a case going automatically, oh, this is the actual answer before I even come up with an answer. You know what I mean? Right. So I wait till I see the information, go through the information, have a chance to investigate some other stuff, see if I can eliminate some things off the usual suspects list, and then see what I'm left with and see if there's a logical explanation for some of those things. But I mean, that's what got me into this. And then, as far as the paranormal, I really didn't do many investigations up until I started doing the UFO stuff, and I've only done a couple, but they've been really funny. Go ahead.
No. So with the, you know, since we're on the topic of MUFON and stuff, what exactly do they do? Like, are they, I mean, I know, are they similar to the Stars Academy, you know, that like, are they kind of like the same type of thing, like looking for answers type thing? I mean, is that what they do?
You got all kinds of people in MUFON. You're going to have people like me that are skeptical. You're going to have diehard skeptics, but you're also going to have, I apologize if I offend anybody, you also got your Kool-Aid drinkers. So there's a real good mix of all these different groups that are in it. And to be honest, that's what you want. You want as many opinions as you possibly can.
Sure.
And then hopefully somewhere in the middle is where you find your answer. The main mission is to try and figure out what the phenomenon is. It's kind of like I always talk about religion. People will complain about religions and how horrible they are. It's not the religion, it's the people that practice it. Those are the people that take that idea and they corrupt it. So when it comes to whether you're talking about NICAP, whether you're talking about MUFON, whether you're talking about any of these other organizations, some of them start in a really good place. They're able to keep their, I'll say, keep their affairs in order. And in this case, they're legitimately, in my mind, they're legitimately trying to find an answer. Whether or not we have enough evidence to come to a really good conclusion is a totally different story.
Right. I mean, how many, so you get the reports, right? So people send you the reports and you kind of look through the evidence and like look through their claims and stuff like that.
Yes.
How many would you say are credible or substantiated? Like how many would you say are like, wow, you know, out of how many?
Just
say ballpark, you know, I don't,
I mean, if I was going to give you percentages, I think 90% of the cases that we get are people who legitimately believe they see something.
Right.
There's a very, very small percentage that, are like hoaxes and stuff like that. The hoaxes, you might get some people who are just trying to get a laugh out of you. You know what I mean?
Right.
Some of them are legitimately trying to pull one over on you. Those are the ones that really kind of make you scratch your head, because I think we're all in it to try and figure out what this thing is. And the problem is when you start throwing hoaxes into the mix, it you got to spend so much time kind of weeding those things out. And that's time that you could spend doing something else.
Right. Out of the claims that you get, what's the most common shape of aircraft that people, is it the triangle? Is it the saucer shaped? Like what?
Yeah. So there's a combination of them. Actually, we get a report every month. Hold on one second here and let me pull it up on my phone. We get a report, statistical reports every month. And then what it'll do is it'll actually break it down for us by country. And then it'll actually break it down within the United States, So which state actually has the most reports that month. And then it will also give us the shape of the object. So it'll tell us we received X number of reports. So this past month, it was a circle or a sphere was the most dominant shape that people had seen. Just after that was a disc shape. And then after that was triangle or ovals or cigar shapes.
Yeah, I mean, I say this all the time in the show, but I feel like we're getting closer now, you know, for the government to finally say like, hey, you know, like throw their hands up and be like, all right, you know what? You know, they exist, you know, I really feel like we're getting closer to that because you see the government's starting all these different, you know, they just put a 16 scientist team together to investigate things. They're not going to do that and throw some money into something if they didn't think that there's something going on, you know, or if they didn't know that there's something going on, you know, and they keep sidestepping it by saying, well, we're not saying it's aliens, but we're saying it's something that we don't know and it could be a threat to national security, you know, which is a possibility. I mean, that's obviously, you know, if it's something that you don't know and there's things in our airspace that we don't know what they are, you know, but do you think that we're getting closer to these answers actually coming out?
That's a tough question.
Yeah.
It all depends on who you talk to. Like UFO Twitter, everybody thinks it's going to happen tomorrow. I'll be real honest. I don't think you're going to get an answer anytime soon. I really don't. If you are the US government and you have all these people that want to talk about UFOs and your main concern is national security, why not take advantage of all this free press that's going to basically obscure or cover up whatever it is that's out there? And it's just going to lend itself to the confusion and keep whatever it is hidden. I think the government is legitimately looking at possible threats as far as foreign technology, that kind of stuff. And I think they're willing to let the UFO stuff kind of come into play. Maybe not necessarily because they believe in it, but because of what it will do for them. I thought about it this way. You had the Gillibrand Act, right? And the question is, why was everybody so gung-ho? Why was the government and these defense people so gung-ho? The only thing that I kept coming back to was, how do they benefit from it? And my answer was money. I mean, if you really want to generate more money for your programs, this might be the way to do it.
Right,
tell the government, we don't know what it is. We need more money to figure it out. We need more money for better equipment and resources.
Yeah, I mean, and it makes sense too in the fact that you're going to have more people looking in the sky too. You know, you have more observers looking to see, you know, if it's not aliens or if it is some kind of foreign threat, you know, somebody's going to see it now because there's more people looking up in the sky.
And, you know, people are going to tweet about it. You know, people are going to Instagram about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And what it does is it gives them, like you were just saying, more eyes on the sky.
Yeah.
It gives them more eyes on the sky, more people looking. And you know what? Doesn't cost them a penny to do it.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. So, unlike the government, I like to have full disclosure, right? So earlier today, I had asked you about the CE5 protocol, and I know you did some research and stuff on it. Yeah, I did a segment on it, like a show or two before this, and you know, the Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind protocol.
Yeah.
With Stephen Greer, I believe his name is. What do you know about this? You know, as far as, you know, you were looking it up and stuff like that. What do you think about this protocol?
I didn't do a deep dive on it, but I did spend roughly about an hour or so just going through, taking a look at it. Looked at some videos, tried to pull up whatever articles I could find. And some of the stuff, some of the articles, some of the skeptical articles talked about his childhood and that sort of thing, which I'll be honest, you know what? It doesn't really need to be in the article. You know what I mean?
Right.
The person's life is their life. Focus on the thing that you're trying to focus on, which is this program legit? So I watched, there was a highlight video. It was from Boulder, Colorado. It was filmed or at least posted October 19th of 2021. Next one I watched was a video. It was like the easy user guide to CE5. And I think that was by Engaging the Phenomena. That was posted in March of 2020. Then I actually watched the one video with Stephen Greer. It was Techniques and Mantras for Making ET Contact, which was posted July 24th of 2019. Now, I'll just kind of give you a quick snippet. Like in the one video, the highlight video from Boulder, Colorado, he talks about meditation. He talks about some different things. He uses a Hindu prayer. And then he talks about some other things that I thought were kind of weird, where he talks about he obtained information. I want to say he used the term illegally or something like that, classified information illegally, which kind of makes me think, well, you're saying that you got it this way. You're not really going to reveal your sources. Okay, so why not? Well, right. if I reveal my sources, then people can go check it. And if they check it, they might find out that I'm being less than honest.
Right.
The next video, the Engaging the Phenomenon, the gentleman goes through it and he talks about how they do this step-by-step process. And he talks about they locate, they pick a particular location, whether because it makes them feel safe or it's like quiet and allows them to kind of focus. Then they'll go through some meditating. After they're done meditating, he said they do what they call CTS, this coherent thought sequencing, AKA you're talking about remote viewing. So they'll sit there with the intent of trying to make contact. And so he said what they'll do is they'll start off with thinking like across the universe sort of thing. And image, like have that image in your mind of who it is or what it is that you're going to make contact with. And then from there, what you're going to do is you're going to use that connection to sort of guide them here. So my understanding of the CE5 thing is the whole goal is to try and create some sort of contact with humans being able to, I don't know if you want to call it telepathy or what you want to call it, but being able to contact aliens and then sort of draw them into where you are. Starting in the deep space, and then you change your focus to something that gets a little bit closer to where we are, like the Milky Way galaxy, from the Milky Way galaxy to our solar system, from our solar system to the Earth, from the Earth to the continent, from the continent to the actual country, to the actual state, to the actual location.
Right.
And then from there, he talks about using field tools, I think is the term that he used, where you have either a laser EMF detector or night vision goggles or night vision camera, something along those lines, where you can use those to try and catch the attention and supposedly aliens or craft or something of that kind will appear.
Yeah, I mean, reading up on it and, you know, I did the little story about it. You know, I don't know, man. I mean, my thing is this, it sounds almost like, I don't know if you want to call it like a fairy tale, but the fact that he says, oh yeah, no, but you know, you're bringing them in there and you're getting contact and they're nice and they want to contact you. And then if they sense fear or any kind of, then they go away. Like, so they're all nice and good, but you hear about, you know, all these other alien encounters. Not every, you know, if aliens are for real and there's all these different species of them, not all of them are nice. You know, there's not, and so you don't know what you're bringing. You know, no. What I'm saying? If it really is happening, what if you bring the assholes down here? You know, like that want to harm somebody.
Yeah.
You know, or harm you for like disrupting them. You know, you don't know. You know, so you're kind of like playing with fire, I think, in a way, if it's actually happening, if it's actually true.
Right. So The other video I watched was the Techniques and Mantras video. And some of the stuff you talked about, you have some stuff in there about Zen Buddhism and their breathing techniques. Then he talks about another thing, which I totally disagreed with. He said that the mantras that they use, even though they sound Hindu, they are not Hindu. But he says they were written in Sanskrit. I call time out on that. I teach ancient history.
Right.
Here's what I know. Sanskrit was a language that was created by the Aryans. It was an Indo-European group. They came into South Asia somewhere around, it was roughly around 1500 BC. Hinduism was created somewhere between 2000 and 1500 BC. So Hinduism is definitely older than the Sanskrit language. Now, Sanskrit will become the main language of what they refer to as the Vedas, which is the holy book of Hinduism. So those two things are definitely tied to one another. So once I saw that, I kind of looked at it and I go, okay, all right. So some of these things I can kind of overlook, but this is one of those things that I looked at and said, okay, either this is an accuracy issue or this guy just really didn't give a crap. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that was one of the things that really set off a flag with me. The other thing that I thought was, I'll say kind of funny. He's talking about this tone. And I was like, wait a second. I've heard that tone before. I'm like, holy shit. I go, that's the tone from Close Encounters, the movie. So what I did was I pulled up, I jumped into YouTube real quick and I started looking for it. And I'm like, the tones from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I pull it up and there was this video. It's called The Five Tones or something like that. And I played it and I was like, holy shit. The first three tones of the five is the three tones that this guy was humming when he was doing his conference. So I was like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. So he left out the last two, but he got the first three.
Wow.
So, I mean, a lot of this stuff I just go through and I look at. He takes different techniques from these Eastern philosophies, whether you want to talk about Hinduism, Jainism, Sikhism, yoga techniques as far as the breathing and those sort of things, Zen Buddhism, Buddhism itself. And he kind of takes those things and he's kind of putting them and mixing them together. And as I was going through and I was looking at this, I was kind of like, you know what? I know I've seen this before. And then it hit me. I go, holy crap, I know what it is. The contactees of the 1950s. So I was like, holy crap. So I grabbed a couple of the books that I have and I just started going through them real quick. And I had stuff, pages dog-eared, stuff highlighted and that sort of thing. So I just started going through real quick and I'm like, holy crap, Adamski, George Adamski, right? So Adamski was all about the Space Brothers and all that other stuff. A couple of years after him, you had another guy, Daniel Fry. Another couple of years after that, or like a year after that, you had Orfeo Angelucci. You had another guy right after that, Howard Menger. And then you had another guy right after that, George Van Tassel. And all these guys claim to have had contact with aliens. And one of the things that they all had in common is they claimed that the Space Brothers were visiting because they were concerned about the use of atomic bombs and that we were going to wind up destroying ourselves. The other thing was they believed that the universe was here or sending them here to save us from ourselves because we were kind of stuck and we couldn't evolve. So they had to come here and show us the way. From there, you could also kind of look at it as when you look at ancient religions, you see, like with Judaism, you have Moses, who was a prophet who was sent, you know what I mean, to get us back on the right track. Jesus, some groups will look at him as a prophet sent to get us back on the right track. Muhammad, prophet, sent us to get us back on the right track. So I was like, just like all these different things were kind of coming together for me. Then he started talking about the tones. And one of the things that they talk about here is the vibrations or the tones with the contactees from the 1950s, talking about vibrational level or something along those lines. They all wrote books. They all did lectures. They all basically tried to make money off of these deals as much as they possibly could. Van Tassel had what he called the Giant Rock Convention. You had Adamski created these get acquainted clubs or groups. Fry wrote a couple books. Manger wrote a book, like all these different things. And what I came back to was, and I tried to look it up, but I couldn't find it. I could only find the most recent one. I wanted to find out how much do they charge for one of these conventions? How much is it to actually go there in person? And I guess they're doing them now in virtual reality. So I couldn't find anything from before COVID. Whenever I would try to click on those things and buy tickets, it would say it's already closed, the event's over with, that kind of thing. But for the this past conference that they had, it was a 3-day virtual conference and it was $200.
Huh. Wow.
And then if you just wanted to do like, they would do a couple different things the first 2 days. And then the third day that night, they would do like a thing under the stars, like a, we'll call it like a sky watch.
Right.
And so if you didn't want to do the conference, you could just do the sky watch. And that was like $50. Hmm. So I don't want to put words in somebody else's mouth, but when I look at it, I'm seeing contactees from the 1950s. I'm just seeing him repackage it a little bit different than what they did back then.
Right. Right. I mean, I just feel like it's going to be like that scene in Independence Day, you know, when the friend goes up on top of the building and like, oh, you know, with the signs, and then they get blown to smithereens, you know, like, I'm just going to, oh, look at it. It's pretty. It's so pretty. And then boom, you know, like I'm not trying to do that, man. And like, I'm not, you know, I want to see a UFO, but I live upstate now and I work the midnight shift. So I drive on the Taconic and the Springbrook at like 2 o'clock in the morning. So I'm looking, trust me, I'm looking.
Dude, I hate that road.
Yeah. It's so freaking dark. And like I'm looking up in the sky and I'm looking in the woods. I'm like, cause I want to see Bigfoot too. Like, or any kind of, you know, deer or anything that's going to be running in front of my car. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the jury's still out with that, but I did buy the $10 app just cause I wanted to read up a little bit more about it, you know, just for the hell of it.
I saw that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the guy's making money. He definitely,
I'll tell you what, I gotta say this about him. I don't know how old he is, but like, I want to get a hold of like his workout regimen. I want to see what he's like eating, his diet, man. That dude is jacked.
Yeah. I didn't see really. I didn't see his physical. Wow.
Yeah. He's pretty built, man. He's pretty built.
So, going back to the ghost stuff, right? The paranormal investigation stuff. You're in a paranormal investigation group?
No, actually, no? I am a what I call a hobbyist or an enthusiast.
Gotcha. Me too.
I'm not part of a formal group or anything like that. I don't want to be part of a formal group because then the issue is everybody wants to do things a certain way. Me personally, I just like going in, and I'll be honest, if you go in by yourself, my thought process, you're probably going to get maybe a little bit more of a response than if you go in with the whole entire group.
Right. Right. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you won't have the other people saying, oh, did you hear that? Or, you know, it's just you and you're the one you're paying attention, you know. It's just you focusing on the task at hand, basically.
And you want to be able to, like I said, I don't want to just debunk other people's stuff. I try to debunk my stuff as much as possible. I'll give you a quick example. So I told you about the refrigerator.
Right, right.
The cable box that we have in our room is so freaking weird, dude. It just starts doing things on its own. And like in the middle of the night, this thing will start glowing. Like the display on the front of the cable box will start glowing. And it wasn't until, again, after my father-in-law had passed away that some of this weird stuff started happening. And so the other night, like this thing just gets super, super bright. It was like full moon in our room. And I wake up and I'm looking and I'm like, what the hell? So I start looking at the display and I start seeing these code messages pop up on the screen. And I'm like, oh my God, I've never seen that before. I'm like, is my cable box possessed or what? So I'm like taking pictures like an idiot with my cell phone and I'm doing a quick video. I think during one of the videos, you can actually hear my wife roll over and say to me, what the hell are you doing? She's like, go back to sleep. And I'm like, nah, I'm like, the cable box is doing this weird freaking thing I've never seen before. She's like, it gets bright all the time. I go, no, this is not bright. I go, it's like dialing up all these codes, CD something or other. And it would start counting from one all the way up to 99. Then it went to like FG or something like that. And then it started again and it went through the whole entire cycle, one through 99. Then the whole entire cable box shuts itself off. And I'm like, holy shit, that just happened on its own. I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, I'm looking around the room and everything. And then all of a sudden it comes back on and reboots itself. And so I'm looking, I leave like the remote controls for the TV on the bed. So I'm like looking to see if the cat pushed it or something like that. So here I am. I got my video. I got my pictures. I'm all pumped, man. I'm like, I'm going to prove that I have like this possessed cable box. So I go online. I start looking just to make sure. I'm like, was there a cable issue or something like that? And I can't find anything online. I pull up my email. I start going through my email. I have an email from Spectrum Cable that they were going to do maintenance between 12 a.m. and 3 a.m. and that there might be some issues with your cable box during that time frame. So,
yeah. I didn't know where you were going with that story, because I've actually had some weird cable box stories as well, actually. When my grandmother was sick in the hospital, I'm going back like 15 years ago, maybe. And she was very, very sick in the hospital. We didn't think she was going to survive. And she actually ended up living a few more years after this. But we were all, you know, I have a large family on that side. I have like 10 cousins and, you know, three aunts and an uncle. You know, it's a pretty big side of my family. And so we were all out there, and me and my cousin were staying at my aunt's house. Now, my aunt's house is very, she's seen this full-bodied apparition in her house every night for years. I mean, this thing would stand at the foot of her bed. And, you know, of course, she's had psychics in there, and they tell her this guy's name is Charlie. He used to live in the house, and, you know, he shows himself sometimes, and he does things, right? So, of course, me being the idiot 23 or 24-year-old that I was, you know, getting ready or whatever to go to the hospital to visit my grandmother. And I said, hey, and now that I'm thinking about it, I said it in front of a mirror, which probably isn't the best thing to do either. But I'm standing in front of the mirror and I said, hey, if there's anything here, give me a sign, right? And I didn't get anything, right, at that time. I'm like, all right, whatever, screw it, right? So we go to the hospital, we're there for like 10 hours, come back, and now me and my cousin are laying on the couches in the living room, going to sleep. So all of a sudden, I'm looking, and I see the cable box flipping the channels over and over and over and over and over and over. And it just keeps going, though. Like, it, like, 0 to 99, and it just kept going and going and going. And I'm looking, and I'm like, yo, I said, my cousin's name was Jason. I said, yo, Jason, I said, are you laying on the remote or something? Can you turn off the TV? He goes, nah, you know, he goes, the remote's right there. He goes, yeah, turn it off or whatever. Right. So we turn it off. It flips back on and starts cycling the channels again. So now I start laughing, you know, and he's like, what did you do? What did you do? I said, I asked for a sign. He goes, I swear to God, if I see anything, I'm going to beat your ass. You know, he's like, I swear to God, why would you do that? I said, I don't know, man. I just, this place is supposedly haunted. So I wanted, And sure enough, he showed himself that way, you know, like but I've actually had it where my mom had passed away about 12 years ago. And, I had actually had an experience where, I dreamt about her, and then I dreamt about, like, I have my, virtual reality headset sitting right next to me, my Oculus and stuff. And I love it. So I had a dream about how I was with that side of my family, and I was showing them my Oculus headset, right? And I put it on within my dream. I put the headset on, and I see my mom sitting there waving to me and like smiling within my dream in the headset. And in real life, I feel her like kind of caressing my back, because I was going through a rough time at that time. I wake up from the dream to see the cable box was rebooting. Right? I'm like, okay, the cable box is rebooting. I mean, it happens. It's like 2 o'clock in the morning. That's when they do their stuff, you know, late at night. So the cable box reboots, and I always kept it on Comedy Central, right? The thing that popped on, the next show that came on, was a South Park episode where Cartman is showing off his virtual reality headset.
Oh, dude.
I was like, well, there you go. That's my validation right there. You know, like, there you go. That's it.
That's funny.
I said, I guess that wasn't a dream. I guess I really did have that experience with my mom, you know, like that's, but I mean, nowadays they don't happen quite as much. Cause like I said, I'm not really inviting it anymore, you know, and there's certain things that I talk about for a long time. Like I'll talk about the paranormal stuff and UFOs and stuff. But then there's other things that, you know, I might say, hey, have you ever heard of the Black Eyed Children? You know, we'll talk about that for like 30 seconds, but I'm not going to talk about that for too long, because those mother effers are supposed to come around when you think about them and talk about them. So I'm not trying to have them knocking on my door, on my basement door, because those things would just freak me the hell out, because they're not really children.
That's another weird one, man. That's really weird. I actually have a journal in my room. So this started when my father-in-law passed away. I was diagnosed with what's called FAP. Mm-hmm. It's a genetic condition which prevents me from suppressing tumor growth, and it's actually that causes my kidney issues. So what happened was, to prevent colon cancer, because there's a 100% chance I was going to have it, they actually wound up removing my large intestine. So right around that time, we started having some weird things, not just the freezer with the ice machine, not just the cable box, but we started seeing orbs in the house. And this one time it was, like, we live not too far from Stewart Airport, so the planes will actually circle above on their final descent into the airport. And so when they fly over at night, you'll actually see the strobe light. Depending upon what part of the house they're at, it'll be pretty bright. It'll light up the room, especially since we got a skylight in the bathroom. So I wake up at roughly around 3:30 in the morning. I don't even know what woke me up. And I just kind of look over toward the bathroom. I see a light. I go back over, go to put my head back down on the pillow. And I look up again, because I was like, all right, is it my wife? Is she in the bathroom? And I just happen to notice she's actually laying right there next to me in bed. Hmm. So now I'm thinking, okay, so it's not her in the bathroom. Oh, you know what? It must be a jet flying over, and it's the strobe light lighting it up. And just as I'm thinking that, the light, you could see how the light was shifting, because it was moving closer and closer to the door. And then what happened was, it actually went around the door. So it came out of the bathroom, goes around the door like this. And now it's in our bedroom, hovering roughly about, we'll call it, roughly about head height. Sits there in our bedroom by our door, goes around that door, goes out into the hallway, and just goes boom and disappears.
Wow.
Now, since that time, and I don't know if you noticed my things flicking here.
Yeah.
Since that time, I've actually had other incidents where I have seen the orb. The other one, believe it or not, was actually last week, just before I started having the kidney issues. I had woken up and I saw this thing and it went out in the hallway. I talked about this stuff with my wife and she would sit there and say to me all the time, "Oh, you're full of crap. You're full of crap. You're full of crap." And she woke up and we're sitting there the one night and I'm like leaning on one arm and I'm looking in the hallway and she's like, "What are you doing?" I go, "I just saw another orb." She's like, "Go back to bed, damn it. You're just," she's like, you're losing it. And just as I'm going to lay back down, I see it blink again in the hallway. And my wife turns to me and goes, "Did you just see that?" I go, "See what?" She goes, "The orb." I go, "I knew it." So, and I've actually tried to debunk those because I'm like, well, it could be a car driving by, the light reflects off of this, that sort of thing. But the way that our stairwell is set up, the light really isn't going to come in from down there. And I'm in my office upstairs and this door behind me was actually closed. So if there was something that was going by, then it wouldn't have been able to come. The light wouldn't have come from this room because that door was closed. Hmm. So it's just one of those weird things that you can't explain. I mean, and I've seen them. Was it October 19th? And then just last week I saw it.
Wow. Wow. I mean, yeah, it's funny because that's the one thing, like when I see pictures and stuff, I'm like, orbs, you know, like, I'm not that. But I mean, I've seen one. I saw one 2 days after my mom passed away. I believe it was my mom, you know, because I was in the same room where she had passed away. And I was laying, you know, of course, distraught and thinking about everything. And I see this big red light. Picture, I guess I'm in the living room and I'm laying on the lounge chair and straight ahead is a hallway that leads to the kitchen on the right side. And I see this red light come out of the kitchen and start moving its way up the wall towards me. Yeah, I see the flickering, man. And I see the this red light. And now, yeah, you could say, oh, I was dreaming or I was seeing things. But then my father's dog was following it the whole way and barking at it. You know, so I know I saw what I saw. And then just as it came up to me, it dissipated and it disappeared. And I feel like that was my mom because, you know, that's pretty much the first couple days that somebody passes away is when they have the most energy and they're still earthbound. Apparently, until they, you know, go wherever they're going to go, if they're going to go somewhere, you know. And that was my orb story. But as far as pictures, I never really, you know, I was like, it's too easy to say, all right, well, it's a bug, it's dust, there's so many things it could be. It could be a reflection of the light going off of a dust, you know, a particle of dust, you know. So pictures and videos of orbs never really too much, you know, impress me too much, but
yeah. That's why I'm always about, if you can bring in multiple different things, like whether it's cameras, whether you get some audio, something along those lines. So if you can get multiple bits of information and it all occurs at the same time, in my mind, it gives it like a little bit more credibility. You know right. what I mean? Because now you're catching it on different devices at the same time and you're seeing it or you're hearing it. And it kind of reaffirms what it is that you're seeing or experiencing at that point in time. So that's why I always try to do a couple recorders. I always try to do a couple cameras at the same time, different angles, that sort of thing. Shooting in opposite directions so that this way, there goes my freaking thing again. So that this way, you can kind of use one to help corroborate the other. And in regards to the orbs, I actually caught on audio. I got to clean it up. Unfortunately, I don't have the software on my computer. I haven't gotten into the audio yet, but I actually caught, you could hear a woman's voice.
Wow.
It's real subtle. But you can actually, it's like she's saying a whole entire sentence. So it's weird. And that's why you can have people tell you they've experienced things, but my goal is either try to get it on camera, try to get it on video, try to get it on audio. If you could get it on all those, even better, because then you got multiple devices giving you information.
On to the next thing, right? Let's talk about the blurry man himself. So you're a Bigfoot enthusiast, right?
Oh, love Bigfoot. Love Bigfoot since I was a kid.
Have you ever had any experiences like seeing the guy, or you just
zero experiences? I've had people tell me stories, but I've never, me personally, I've never experienced it. I know I've had, and this is funny, I've actually had students who have told me about it. And this is before I ever was even close to being an investigator. The one young lady was telling me, they lived up in Sullivan County. She and her dad were walking along a trail. So they had cut trails on their property for their ATVs. Mm-hmm. And so they were, for whatever reason, that day they were just walking along, and as they were walking along, they heard like some different noises, kind of like monkey type grunts and that sort of thing. The daughter was getting all scared and everything, and the dad's like, "Don't worry about it, we'll be okay, just keep moving." And she said at some point a rock about that big had gotten thrown from up on the hill down, and it landed roughly about 20 feet in front of them. So I've gotten a couple stories like that where people have said they've either heard or seen rocks or something along that line. But me personally, no. I mean, I'd love to see Bigfoot. I'd love to see a UFO. I'd love to see all that stuff, except for the Loch Ness Monster.
Well, as far as cryptids go, do you like any of the others? Are you fascinated with any of the other cryptids? Or
I think a lot of it is Bigfoot. I think it's really interesting. But I also believe that there's one that may have a possibility of actually being true. I think it's probably the best one is Bigfoot. Just simply because if you take a look at like the archaeological record, you'll see that there are things, whether you're talking about the giant sloth, which was like 6 foot tall, or you're talking about Gigantopithecus. And I think they just actually, they just recently found some other type of species. So all these different things, it's in the archaeological record. We have fossils, that sort of stuff that tells us something very similar to it did exist. Is it possible that this thing is just a leftover? You had the coelacanth, which they believed had died off millions upon millions of years ago and was discovered in like the 1920s and the 1930s. And is it possible that Bigfoot is just one of those things?
Do you think, what do you think Bigfoot is? Do you think he's like an undiscovered animal? You know, because the gorilla was a cryptid at one time. You know, do you think he's an undiscovered animal? Do you think he's an alien or an interdimensional being? Like, I know. We talked about...
You're killing me, dude. You're killing me.
I don't want to get you in trouble.
No, I'm good.
What do you think? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm definitely a flesh and blood kind of guy. I do not believe it's interdimensional. I don't believe it walks between worlds or any of that other stuff. It does leave some evidence in the form of footprints. I got Grover Krantz's book. I got John Green's book. I got Jeff Meldrum's book. I got another book someplace else. All those books are on Bigfoot. And one of the things that they tend to focus on is talking about the footprints. Possibly one of the best forms of evidence that we have is the footprints. Admittedly, there are a ton of people that do fake the footprints, but it's when you find the footprints that aren't perfect, those are typically the ones that are believed to be legitimate. And then when you find dermal ridges in the footprint, that gives it a little bit more credibility. I think there's greater potential for Bigfoot to be real than there is for any of the other things to be real.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree with you on that, because it's just been, I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of sightings. I mean, not everybody could be, you know, wrong, I guess you could say, you know, or mistaken about it. You know, there's actually, I have a, I don't know if you've met him. I know he's around our neck of the woods. Al Santariga.
Never met him.
So he's a Bigfoot guy also. Actually, he just had a seminar the other day at the Putnam Library, Putnam Valley Library, and all about Bigfoot. And he's a cryptozoologist. He's witnessed Bigfoot, the Dogman, and a whole bunch of other cryptids. That's what, you know, that's what he does. You know, unfortunately, I don't have the time to go investigate in the, you know, walking around in the woods for hours and hours and hours, you know, because I'm sure that's like a painstakingly thing too, you know, like, oh, looking at branches for, you know, cut in certain ways. And, you know, it's a lot of research, you know, pretty much. It's probably a lot of boring research at that, but, you know, yeah, I mean, like you said, I would love to see that stuff too. I definitely want to go on an investigation with those guys too, because I've never actually been, you know, I've been a paranormal enthusiast, you know, since I was a kid. Never really got into cryptids, and I never really learned too much about the UFO thing until I started my podcast about 2 years ago. I've always been interested in it, but I never really, you know, went far into it. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to see if any of this stuff is legit or any of it's, you know, real. I mean, I definitely think that the guys that I interviewed are definitely, they're not bullshit artists. So I definitely believe in what they're saying. You
know, that's the thing is, people experience something. The question is, what did they experience? And unfortunately, you weren't there to be with them when they experienced it. So it's kind of hard to pass judgment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean that their reaction towards it is definitely the normal reaction. Like they were like, yeah, we saw the dog man like way too freaking close. It scared the hell out of us. You know, like, yeah. I mean, if you saw this gigantic, like, I mean, the dog man is supposed to be basically like a werewolf, you know, to like look like that. I mean, if I saw that thing within arm's length, I'd be scared to hell too. I don't know if I would go out on any more investigations after that.
I was going to say, you better go get that stake that you pulled off of that prisoner, dude.
Right. But I mean, there's just so many things, man. I mean, a lot of people think that, I don't know where it came from, but now everybody's trying to put everything together, you know? Oh, well, Bigfoot is an alien. He's a cryptid alien time traveler that, you know, like, why are you putting everything together now? I mean, I understand, you know, it's all paranormal. It's all under the same umbrella of paranormal, but one thing doesn't have to do with another thing, you know? But I mean, who knows? You know, I guess that's why it's not, there's no experts in anything paranormal. You know, they say there's no such thing as an expert because it's a pseudoscience. You know, there's no legit evidence, you know, or at least no scientific evidence that's been proven, I guess you could say. By
there's no real legitimate course of study. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's not like somebody sits down and says, oh, okay, here's paranormal 101 and here's the process that you have to go through. I think that's why when it comes down to it, you got to look at the science. You make sure that you go through things the proper way, that if you do something, was it something that I did that caused me to see that in that particular way? And then you try to reproduce whatever it was that you had just seen. Like when it came to the orbs, like I would sit there and I was like, was it just me? Did I just see something? Was it like my eyes playing tricks on me? Right. And this is the stuff I do when I'm bored in the middle of the night and I can't sleep. I'll like close one eye and you know what I mean? And I'll do stupid stuff like that just to see if I can get something to occur. And if it occurs, great. But I'll be honest, I haven't been able to really reproduce many of those things.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, that's how an actual person would try and investigate an issue, not like the paranormal investigators on TV that just, oh my God, what was that? And they run away.
Like, here's the thing,
bro. Like, you're on TV, you're an investigator. Why, you know, that to me, that was always kind of silly because, look, I'm a prison guard, right? So when I hear a disturbance, I run towards the issue, right? I'm not running away from it. I'm running towards where that crazy noise or that screaming is coming from. That's where I'm running to. You know, I'm not running away from it.
I'm right there with you, dude. I'm right there with you. I'm not running away. I'm like, all right, this is your job. You say this is what you want to do. You want to prove it. Well, you're not going to prove it by your ass facing it. Go at it, dude. Take it head on. And that's, I look at these things and again, I'll watch some of those shows just because I want to get a good laugh, not necessarily because they do things in the most scientific way. I think, like I said before, as long as you kind of use a scientific process method by which you do things, in the end, if you come up with something, you might be able to go through those steps, figure out what, whether it was something that you did or if you get through the process and it's not repeated, you know what I mean? Then you know it wasn't you. Then that kind of kicks it into the other category where now you can say, okay, it wasn't something that occurred because of me. Maybe there's something legitimate to it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's why I've always gravitated more towards the shows like Paranormal Caught on Tape, you know, like, cause that's just like a quick, like, you know, this is what happened in the video, you know, surveillance video or something like that. And it just shows like some crazy stuff happening. That's what I like. I like that stuff, you know, like show me shows like that and I'm happy, you know, like I'm not crazy about the ghost hunter stuff or I don't even like the ancient aliens shows or anything like that. Just because
can't stand them.
There's no conclusion to them. I hate it. You know,
no, like, because the problem is if they make a conclusion, they will no longer have a show. If they no longer have a show, then they no longer make money. They can't sell their books, blah, blah, blah.
But they all end the same way. You know, they all end like, I guess we'll never really know like they always end off like some stupid question or some like, I guess we'll really never know what's up there in the skies above and blah, blah, blah. Like, all right, come on. I just watched a 2-hour show to see if you freaking
came to some conclusion,
you know, and you told me nothing, you know? So that's why I don't even watch those things.
Yeah, I'm telling you, dude, when it originally came out, I did watch those shows and I was like, oh man, this is pretty interesting. Cause I'm always open to alternatives. You know what I mean? One of the things I always tell my students is come into things with an open mind. So when you start talking about different cultures, there are things that we're going to talk about with those cultures that you're not familiar with, but just because you're not familiar with means you automatically blow it off because there could be some value in that. And so I always look at these things. I watch those shows, that kind of thing, because I'm always looking for like alternative stuff. Like I got over here on my, I got the Egypt Code by Robert Bovell, where he talks about the pyramids and how they represented Orion's Belt, that sort of stuff. I look at all those different things because I'm really interested in that kind of stuff. And when Ancient Aliens first came out, it was really interesting. It introduced me to guys like Graham Hancock and, you know what I mean, Nick Redfern, all these different people that had really interesting ideas. But now that they're into, I don't even know, it's like the 10th season or something like that. It's just, for me, it just seems like it's a rehash of what they did in that first couple of years.
Right. I think actually, I don't know if, I know you said you've heard a couple of the podcast episodes. I don't know if you should check out
season the Haunted two. Chicken Nugget, baby.
Yeah. You know, I get so many like, oh, I love that Haunted eBay segment. You know, a lot of people like the I Read It on Reddit segment too.
I'll tell you, I've been listening to your show as I've been, because I'm in the car. Awesome. I commute. I have a 2-hour round trip, right? So hour to work, hour home. And I'll queue up a few different shows. And the last one, you had me dying, dude. The one with, what was it, the clown doll?
Oh, yay.
Right? Yeah. The guy died and his body is in the doll. And
right.
Oh, my God, dude. I was laughing my ass off.
My thing, like, I mean, who the hell is going to buy a chicken nugget for $500? You know, it's...
And then have to keep it in your freezer.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm not going to...
Maybe I should. I mean, I already got issues with my ice machine. So.
I don't know. Next, you'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, the witching hour, and you'll see your refrigerator floating in the air or something like that. You know,
I'll see it. I'll see a demon chicken.
But no, I think you would actually, on episode 2 and 3 of season 2, I actually interviewed Steve Neal, who is he's a Hollywood monster maker. Basically, he worked on the original Ghostbusters and Fright Night. You know, he like a makeup artist, special effects guy. And he's actually had alien abductions since he was a kid.
Wow.
And I mean, he's written books about it. He's actually very, very good friends with Whitley Strieber. I know you know that name. You know, everybody pretty much knows Whitley Strieber. And he's good friends with Whitley Strieber, and he awesome guest, man. I mean, and actually, I actually met him in virtual reality on my Oculus.
That's hilarious.
Because one of the things that I do is I'll do a paranormal talk virtual reality show where, I have my own little space and I invite people in there just to tell their experiences, you know, tell their paranormal experiences. I like to have like this, you know, safe place for people to tell their experiences instead of having to tell people and getting ridiculed about it, you know?
Right.
And sometimes I'll get like 150 people in there, you know, sometimes I'll get a lot of people coming in.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And they tell some pretty good stories. And this one guy kept coming in the first couple shows, you know, and he had a lot of really good things to say. And he was very, very informative. And he's like, yeah, he goes, I don't know. He goes, look at my name. He goes, and Google me. I'm like, okay. You know, so I Googled him and I'm like, he's a Hollywood. I said, who the hell is this guy? You know? And I looked him up and I'm like, I got to have you on my podcast. You know, like I have to have you on there. And I actually ended up making like a two part thing with him just because I didn't want to stop talking to this guy, you know, so interesting and so, you know, so down to earth and he was funny and, you know, just everything, you know? And I was like, wow, you know, but yeah, I think you would probably enjoy those shows because he goes into a lot of things and he's a very, very intelligent guy, you know. The way he talks about it is that the aliens or the visitors, as he calls them, like Whitley Strieber calls them, they're not here to harm us, basically. Like they're just kind of, I guess, doing experiments, seeing what's up, you know. I don't know how many experiments they got to do though, because they've been doing this crap for a long time now. So I don't know how many experiments you could be doing on people. But he said that there's like this one being that comes to him every single night since he was a kid. It's been the same one, and it comes across as like a mother figure, like almost like a female, like comforting him, you know. You know, telling him everything is okay and that they're just here. It'll only take a couple minutes or whatever and this and that. And he said that it's almost every night he gets like, you know, and he's like, yeah, he goes, and don't tell me it's like night, you know, sleep paralysis or anything. He goes, because I've had experiences where I saw one in my kitchen when I was getting something to eat, you know, mm-hmm. So... Yeah, I think you would definitely enjoy that. And then I had another kid. I had another guy named George that was the complete opposite, actually. He says that his experiences of being abducted is negative, you know, as far as he says that there's an alien presence that's like, basically what they want to do is not control us, but like, live within us, basically. Like that's what he's saying. Like basically, like
channel.
Like, yeah, like they're inside of our brains, kind of, and that they can't make us do stuff, but they could experience what we're experiencing.
Okay.
So basically, like if you're eating something good, they taste it, or if you're having some sexual relations, they feel that, you know, like stuff like that. Like they live inside of you, but it's with evil intentions, like with bad intentions, you know, the total flip side, which I thought that was pretty cool actually, that I got two different sides of it. But, yeah. You know, I don't know how credible that kid is, but it made for a good show, you know, made for a good story. And listen, I'm not here to discount anybody, you know.
Right, and that's the thing. You don't want to crap on anybody,
right?
Like I said, people have experiences. They have them for whatever reason. You and I may not have those experiences, so there's nothing really that that we can do or say because we didn't experience it. So
right. I mean, the way I see it and the way I always say it on the virtual reality thing too is that don't like crap on anybody's experiences, because if it's real to them, like the way I see it is, if it's real to that person, it's real to me. You know right. what I mean? Like, just because we don't believe it or it never happened to us doesn't mean it's not happening. Or if, you know, they're not, if they're wholeheartedly telling you their experience, then they believe it. You know what I mean? So if yeah. they're believing it, then I believe it. You know, that's, I try and keep that kind of positive mind because I work with con artists all day. And, you know, I like to think that there's some honest people out
yeah.
there.
I won't say that I believe in it, but what I do is I just look at it, like I said before, they've had an experience and I'm going to respect what they say. Right. I'm not going to discount it just offhand because I didn't experience that. It's real to them, like you were saying, just because it's real to them and it may not be real to me doesn't mean that I'm the expert on it.
Right. Right. So just kind of closing this out a little bit, man. So you do the paranormal investigations on your own.
Correct.
Do you, I guess as far as that or with the MUFON thing or even with the museum, do you have any kind of events or anything coming up, you know, that you have going on?
So at the museum, we just finished up, the whole month of October. We did a whole haunted maze. We actually, it's hilarious, dude. It took us about a week or so to do it, but we basically disassembled the whole entire museum. Hmm. And then we did the haunted maze, rebuilt it, all kinds of different scenes within it. And I was supposed to go back in last week, but I was having the kidney issues. And then we were supposed to kind of get it back to normal and disassemble everything and get it out. We were making certain sets, and some of the walls that I was making, I actually had to cut some of them in half so that we could get them into the museum. And then we had to reassemble them once we got them back inside. But as of right now, we got the tours going on. I know I'll have to double check with Lance, and I can always get back to you. Mm-hmm. He usually has people that will come in, usually about once a month. He'll have somebody that'll come in and do a talk or something along those lines, or a book signing sort of thing. Me personally, I just like, I'll talk to family. I'll talk to friends. If they know of someone or someplace that people have a thought of, that it might be haunted, then I'll try to see if I can get into that place. Right now I have my one cousin. She swears to God that her house is haunted and that she has poltergeist activity. And she lives roughly about a mile and a half down the road from me.
Oh.
So that's my goal, is to try and get in there. I don't know when I'm going to do it, because teach full time. I got track mm-hmm. season. Track season starts next week. So I'm going to be doing that from now until the end of the school year, basically. Most of my weekends might be mostly Friday nights for indoor season, but then outdoor, we'll have a meet during the week. I'll have meets on the weekend. So that'll eat up a lot of time. So it's going to be like maybe Christmas break or Thanksgiving break, or maybe like that President's Weekend or something like that. I'm going to try and get in there and do that. The one restaurant, I think I told you about that one. That one was really good.
yeah, you showed me some of the evidence that was insane.
That was definitely very, very interesting. And I only spent 2 hours in that place, and I came away with video clips, audio clips, you name it.
That's yeah. I mean, when you showed me that was that was some crazy evidence right there. That was nuts. that's why. I mean, for me, you know, you have all these apps now and stuff on the phone with like the, you know, the ghost box kind of stuff. And I'm like, first off, I think most of them are for entertainment.
It'll tell you that too. It tells you that on the app for entertainment purposes. And it most of those will do the random loop of words.
Right, right.
And it'll just loop it every so often. It'll spit out a word all on its own without really having to do anything or requiring anything. That's why I'm just like an old school, give me a voice recorder.
Right.
Let me set up that voice recorder and I'm just going to let it roll. If I'm walking from one room to the other, I'm going to tag it. That's how I caught the audio that I got with that woman talking in my house. Another time I set up the recorder in the house and I actually left the house. Like I went, got my car, drove into town, went shopping and came back about an hour later and reviewed the audio and you could hear somebody walking around my house.
Wow.
And it wasn't my animals. Like I know I got a couple cats, I got a dog and I know exactly what they sound like. I can pick them out on the audio. This was, you could hear the actual like shoe, the sole of the shoe contacting the floor as they were walking across the floor.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Does that like,
does it freak me out?
Yeah. Does that freak you out that it's in your house that's doing that or?
Not at all.
No?
No, nah, not at all. If I ever sensed that it was, something that was evil or malicious or something like that, then maybe. But I'm a firm believer in that, like you were saying, you can open yourself up for these things.
Right.
If you are afraid, that you're kind of inviting those types of things. And I've always looked at it this way. My wife will tell you otherwise. She runs the house, but I always say I'm the king of the castle. And my job is to protect my family.
Right.
And my attitude is, this is my house, man. And I'm the one that controls what goes on here. Nobody else does.
Right.
And like I said to one of the guys I work with, because he started questioning me about it. And I said, look, if you open yourself up to those things, if that's your expectation, and this is kind of what you were talking about before, then that's what's going to come back to you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I definitely get that. That's why, I've never experienced any kind of demonic thing and I'm not trying to, you know what I mean? Like I'm not opening myself up to that.
Nope.
You know,
nope.
That's something I definitely can't, I can't handle that.
No, you got to protect your family. Much.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I think on the one show that I talked about the museum, I called it the Paranormal Shack.
Yeah.
You had said that when I guess the guys that were bringing some of the stuff there or the doll, one of the dolls that was coming there was some kind of story, right? Like he said that he saw something in the back of his.
So the woman that originally had it, she worked with a paranormal group. I think it was Penn Paranormal. And Mary Jo Chudley is her name. And she had some of the different things that we have that are new to our museum came by way of her. And with this particular one, they had a driver bring it out to the museum. And what she had basically relayed to us was the fact that when she had the doll, she had some different things that happened. They believed that there were two attachments to it. That one might be potentially the spirit of a child and the other one might be something that's a little bit darker. So when the doll was actually in the back seat, the person that was driving it out to the museum looked up in the mirror and saw a shadowy figure sitting next to the doll in the back seat. I'd have been like, all right, pull over, get out. You guys keep the car. I'm out.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I like the stuff, but yeah, no, I'm not dealing with that. That's wow.
That same doll, I don't remember if I told you this one, but we have those little motion balls.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I was in there setting up my camera because that's just the way I am. I'm always videotaping that stuff and filming it and everything and doing audio. And I had the cat. We have the cat ball out there because supposedly the doll moves. And like I said, I'm all about, let me get it on video, dude. I want this on video so I can see it and I can show people. And I had the camera. I was getting it all set up and I was setting down. I think it was my millimeter. I'm setting the millimeter down next to the doll. And before I even touch this thing, the ball starts going off. So the lights start blinking and everything because the ball had moved and I hadn't even touched it. So again, try to be scientific. So I'm retracing everything that I did to see if I can make this thing go off again. And it didn't go off. I was hitting the chair with my hand, banging on the chair to try and get that ball to go off, and it wouldn't go off.
Well, yeah, I was a little upset when I went there and that girl sat down next to the doll instead of me. I was like, damn it, I want to sit next to the doll. You know, because you're like, oh, yeah, you know, you might get an attachment if you sit next to that. I'm like, damn it, I want to sit next to the freaking doll.
I had another tour. This is probably going back maybe about 3 weeks ago. And I apologize. It was, I think it was the first week of October, just before we shut down and started doing the haunted maze. And I had a guy come in on the tour, packed group, and he sits down and he puts his arm around the doll. And I'm like, look, dude, I'm like, disclaimer. Anything attaches to you, anything follows you home, that is your problem. That is not my problem. That is not the town of Crawford problem. That is not the museum's problem. That is all you, dude. I was like, so I don't want to wind up in court and you're trying to sue me for an attachment.
Could that be sued in court? I don't know. I don't know if that could be.
I have no idea. Okay,
is that?
Yeah, that's all I know is, hey, dude, you want to push your luck? You want to do that kind of thing? Go for it. But
it's like the people that that challenged Robert the Doll and Annabelle and stuff. Like, listen, I know you think it's a joke, but don't do that. You know, like you don't know. You don't know what you're dealing with. You know, but people take it as a joke most of the time, you know. Oh, it's a haunted doll, you know.
It's just it's a matter of being respectful. You know what I mean?
Right. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Like you said, you don't want to invite things. You're not doing a TV show. There's no reason to provoke. You be respectful of what's there. If you don't believe that there's something there, okay, fine. Then that's your responsibility. You know what I mean? You take on whatever comes with it.
Or at the most, just be respectful of other people's property, you know, if anything, you know?
I mean, if you had picked it up or something like that, then I would have been like, yo, dude.
Right. Yeah.
But he just kind of put his arm over the top of it and around.
Right, right.
Just to be a wise ass, so.
Of course, of course.
I haven't heard anything, so I'm kind of hoping that means that he wasn't possessed or oppressed or anything like that.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm actually listening to the audiobook, The Demonologist, the Ed and Lorraine Warren book. I don't know if have you ever read that?
I haven't read it yet.
So, yeah, there's the audiobook is on Audible and it's actually really, really good. I mean, for me, I want to believe Ed and Lorraine were legit. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some things where I'm like, I don't know, but they're very, very, they know what they're talking about. At least
they're very convincing and they're very believable.
Right. Right. I mean, yeah. I mean, they definitely sound like, if anything, they sound like they know what they're talking about. You know what I mean? But yeah, I mean, it's a great book. So if you ever, you know, have any time or whatever, if you're going to listen to an audiobook, definitely check that one out because it's pretty good. The Demonologist.
Let me write that down real quick.
Thank you so much for being on the show, man. I definitely appreciate it.
Not a problem, man. Loved it.
Yeah, definitely. If somebody had to reach you in any kind of capacity, either with the MUFON or if they had any kind of paranormal investigation that they'd like you to do or anything like that, how could they do that?
So they could reach me, like you said. Yeah, I think you have my email address, right?
Yeah.
You could always post that if you wanted to. Okay. jwrightmufonfi@yahoo.com.
Okay.
I'm on Twitter. This is how much I pay attention. I don't even know what the hell my Twitter tag handle, whatever it is.
Right.
I'm horrible when it comes to this stuff. So they would be able to get in touch with me with @openminded Skep, S-K-E-P 8. And it would be a capital O for the open-minded.
Okay.
So they can hit me on that and I could try to respond to people there. Obviously, I'm not going to give out my phone number.
Right. Sure. Absolutely.
But you have it. If anybody ever contacts you, you can always contact me.
Definitely.
Other than that, they can stop by the Pine Bush Paranormal Museum. Right now, I'm doing Sundays.
Okay. Yeah. And definitely tell Lance I'm going to have him on the show, too. He's not getting away that easy.
Oh, I'll get him.
I'm definitely going to have him on the show. And
I'll let him know tomorrow.
Because I'm sure the fact that he's the manager there and, you know, he's at that museum. Obviously, I'm sure he's got some plenty of stories as well. So, and from what I'm told by somebody else, he has a different view on Bigfoot that I'd like to hear his view as well. So
he and I argue about that stuff all the time. But that's what's funny is that, and that's what we were saying before about the respect issue is you can have two different opinions and still be nice to one another, still get along with one another. Why? Because you're not crapping on somebody else's beliefs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. So yeah, thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate it.
Anytime.
I'll let you know when the show is on and stuff. But
if I ever get into my cousin's house and I'm actually able to do the investigation there, I'll hit you up. I'll send you some stuff.
Awesome. I appreciate that. That's great. All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks a lot, man. Have a good night.
Have a good night. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that'll do it for this show, guys. I am Ghost Joe. Thank you to Chris Whitehouse of the Whitehouse Investigation Team and Edgegrave Dave for your awesome segments as usual. And thank you to John Wright for the amazing interview. I'll definitely have you on again, and I hope you guys enjoyed that. Thank you to the listeners, you guys, for listening and getting me to over 5,000 listens in 2 years. That's an amazing achievement, and I couldn't have done it without you guys. So have a happy and safe holiday, and I'll see you next year. I know that was super cheesy, but, you know, I had to say it. All right. Later, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Podcast. And thank you to all my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warpedrealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744. Or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or warpedrealitypodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your shorts.